Leon Rabin, who acted in Margot's company and then became a very dear, a very wise and sweet arts patron in Dallas, once told me that when people would complain to him about, gee, there's nothing to see, nothing to do here, he often told them about what it was like to go out in the late 40s and early 50s in Dallas. He said you would take a date to one of the movie theaters on Main Street, or perhaps if there's a Broadway show, one of the live theaters. And then you would drive out to where Ross meets Greenville Avenue, and you'd buy fresh fruit off a truck. And that was about it. Dallas, for all that I've said about the cultural deprivations, was in some respects a relatively sophisticated city. There were a whole string of theaters on Main Street here. The Hublitzell Theater chain had theaters here. It got the Broadway tours. It got major movie premieres and that kind of thing. So in relative terms, it was a sophisticated town. Nonetheless, what Margot was offering them was something new and vital. And she wasn't really asking for much. I mean, she wasn't asking for a huge development, a huge building, and all this sort of thing. She wasn't doing that. In a way, Dallas was extremely fortunate. They got off cheap. Inherit the Wind remains the premier statement of anti-fundamentalism in the modern American canon. It is also an anti-McCarthyite play. It's anti-mind control. And to a degree, it has to be admitted, it is anti-Southern. So you have to imagine the guts that it took to produce that play in Dallas, the small town, the fundamentalism, the battle going on. It was very similar to the battle that Margot waged in her own life to free her own mind, to expand it. The salvation that she found in theater is very much akin to Lawrence and Lee's plea for the power, even the sacredness of the human mind at the end of Inherit the Wind. The resident theater movement doesn't really take off until almost 20 years later, in the 60s, when the Ford Foundation begins giving grants under the leadership of W. McNeil Lowry, starts giving grants to theaters outside of New York. But basically the model that they see is Margot Jones' model. How to build this theater in terms of the boards, in terms of the actors, in terms of the playwrights, how to handle it, the programming, all of that is really everything that Margot Jones did in 1947 and 1955. The theater in the round, the arena theater staging, was important because it delivered a different kind of theater experience for Margot. It delivered something that Broadway couldn't deliver, and that was this intimacy. But it was actually a very shrewd and financially necessary staging configuration, because can't have sets, major sets. So when she was pushing that, it was a way of other theaters to start cheaply. The important thing was the writing, the playwriting, the acting, getting that up. Forget about the sets and the costumes. Remember that with all the success that she was getting in Dallas, this is still a shoestring operation. I mean, go and see that space. We're talking about a tiny little room. A tiny little room with a ceiling that leaked. When I bring theater critics from around the country and I show them that space, they're almost uniformly stunned. It's this little meeting room. That's all it is.